Welcome back to another episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Rice. This is the show that is about transforming your health, your body, and your life. I know we talk about nutrition, about exercise, about sleep, but mindset is a critical part of how we approach when we work out, how we work out, how we perform in our job, how we perform running our business, and more. That's why I have today's guest on to help us level up our mindset. His name is Charlie the Spaniard Brenneman. And you may have even seen Charlie on TV because he has fought in the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, which is the pinnacle event for mixed martial arts in the world. And that's a huge accomplishment. We're going to talk about how Charlie got to that point, because a lot of great fighters who are amazing and maybe even as good, if not better than Charlie, will never get that opportunity. He's going to share with you why it takes more than just skill to succeed in whatever you're doing in your life. You're also going to learn the lessons that Charlie uses to go into the cage. You may not see a lot of parallels between what you do and what Charlie has done, because he's no longer fighting, as you'll hear, and you'll hear why that's no longer the case. But there are a lot of parallels, because it's simply about being able to perform when the stakes are high. And we're all in situations where the stakes are high in our lives, and we need to be able to perform the best that we can when the pressure's on. I know you're going to love this episode, especially if you need to level up your mindset, if you need to level up your confidence. So enjoy the episode with Charlie the Spaniard Brenneman. Charlie Brenneman, welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks, buddy. I'm ready to do this upright.
Yeah, and we were kind of taking off before we hopped on and recording and realized, wow, we got to get this down, because we were talking about so many important things like a winner's mindset and being able to push through when things are tough, when you're chasing after your dream, trying to make it happen. And you've been so successful. You are a professional mixed martial art fighter. You made it to the pinnacle event of the sport, which is the UFC. You are also an author, and you're also a speaker. For those people who are listening right now who haven't heard about you and your successes, can you talk a little bit about what you do right now?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, you know, I guess I made my name in professional fighting in the UFC. And as I'm nearing or have neared, you know, I haven't made a commitment either way, but it appears that my fighting career is coming to an end, because as I was telling you earlier, the return on investment is just not worth it. And the fighting has always been a business to me. You know, I get the question a lot, well, man, if you love it, just do it. But I really get a thrill from sprints and lifting weights, you know, and I can do that here at my house or in my neighborhood. I don't have to risk my life and limb to do that. So fighting has always been a business, and it certainly is my passion, but I was fortunate to combine the two. So I've kind of branched out a little bit, and a lot bit actually, and I've been focused the last year and a half on building a speaking and mentoring career, and that's my day to day now.
Yeah, very cool. And for a lot of people, they may not see the parallels right away between, like, whoa, you beat up guys in a cage and now you're mentoring people. But we're going to get into that and more. Before we do, I'd love to hear the story of your hero's journey, if you will, because you were a wrestler, you had a successful high school wrestling career, you became a Spanish teacher, and then you went on to become a fighter in the UFC. Can you talk about your journey from being this kid who grew up and started wrestling in high school to what you're doing now? How did that unfold for you?
Yeah, you know, I'll condense it a little bit so we can get to the nitty gritty, but yeah, I grew up a wrestler. I'm from a small town in central Pennsylvania, and from a young age, my parents instilled in me the standard of excellence. They basically said, you know, we will provide for you everything we can if you dedicate yourself to academics and athletics. And, you know, so basically, I guess if you look at it that way, it was kind of a deal. It was like, Charlie, you put all of your energy into excelling in academics and athletics, and we will give you everything we can give you. And it wasn't that they forced me into athletics. They saw that potential in me. So they said, okay, essentially said, okay, son, here's the deal. And, you know, I took them up on that and graduated from high school and was an all-state wrestler. Graduated from college as an academic All-American and one match away from an All-American, which is the top 12 in Division I wrestling. And All-American being the top 8, I was the round of 12. And then I hopped out of competitive life and thought, I'm done with this. I want to be normal. I'm sick of the sacrifice. Yeah, right? I'm sick of the sacrifice. I'm sick of the dedication, the perseverance, the heartbreaks. Because this is the thing. People look at me or people look at, you know, you or other successful people, and they say, oh, they have it all. It's a cakewalk for them. But what they don't understand is that to get where I've gotten, to do what I've done, I've experienced 10 times the heartache and 10 times the failures, 10 times the just the heartbreaks that the average person experiences. Because it's like you take one step forward, five steps back, one step forward, five steps back. So it's just a giant learning process to get where I've gotten. So when I was in that normal life that I coveted so much, I had the opportunity to be on a reality TV show called Pros versus Joes. I excelled at it. I was the champion. And that sparked in me a desire to compete again. And really the only physical attributes I had was wrestling. It was grabbing a hold of people, dominating people physically, which sounds awkward outside of context.
Right.
But I mean, that it's true. So a friend of mine had just signed.
Well, it's a martial art, right?
Exactly, yeah. So a friend of mine had just signed to the UFC, and one day, and this is the pivotal moment, the aha moment of my life, I was sitting in class. I saw my friend had just signed with the UFC, who happened to be a world champion, Frankie Edgar. And I got home from school. I called my best friend. I was venting, and I said, one day I'm going to be a UFC fighter. And that was it. My mind was made up. My future was laid out in front of me. And the rest is, you know, not history, but it's the rest is, you know, my fighting career and what brought me to where I am today.
Yeah, and I don't think people get how difficult it is to get to the UFC. As we were talking about before, I have professional fighting MMA fighter friends, and some of them will never make it there because of the marketability, because of how it's changed as a business over time. Can you talk about how you made it and what you had to go through to get to the pinnacle of the sport?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's something that you're right, a lot of people don't realize. And it's so much to the fact that I, as I take on a speaking and mentoring business, I think, man, like that's an art. To do that is an art. And I, as well as other UFC fighters, we have that knowledge that not a lot of people have, but there's so much that goes into it. Putting yourself, one, you have to train. You have to be good, right? You have to be at least really good. But then it's also putting yourself around the right people because, like you said, your friends, I don't doubt that some of your friends could beat me in a fight, but that doesn't matter. What matters is the total package and putting it all together to get to the UFC. That's putting yourself around the right people. That's building your social media following. That's building your local following. That's creating a brand. One of my early mentors, Eddie Alvarez, who – here's another point. The two people that I've mentioned who were the two biggest impacts from day one of my career were Eddie Alvarez and Frankie Edgar, both world champions. I don't know if I just got really lucky or what, but those two have played a huge role in my life and career. But Eddie said to me, look, man, if you don't go around promoting yourself, nobody will. So right. Do it. And, you know, that's something that I, to this day, hold near and dear, you know. Ted, you and I could be partners or you could be my manager or my agent, but the fact is that you will never work as hard as I will to make my dreams come true. Nobody will. You and I could be twin brothers, but you're going to work just a little bit harder than me to make your dreams come true. And that's the mindset and the attitude that I took on from a young age. And, you know, those are just a few of the components that went into it, but all very useful.
Yeah. And you said building a personal brand. And, you know, we've seen the success of guys like Conor McGregor, who, you know, the guy's good, but he was able, I really respect him as a businessman in taking a business where it does have this reputation for treating fighters poorly or not paying them enough. And he really succeeded financially out of it. And whether he is quit for good or not, I respect what he's done. And this is a lesson. If you're listening right now, you're like, well, I'm never going to fight in the cage. I'm not interested in even MMA that much. This is an important lesson that you can take and apply to anything, because Charlie, as a personal trainer, I learned that same lesson really hard. I invested a lot in becoming great, but it was about building the brand and getting people to know me. Because if you're the best person in the world, but only five people know about you, then it's not going to get you anywhere. Such an important point.
Yeah, I've experienced that. You know, as I get into more of a business, I even feel silly saying business mindset or whatever, but it is. I mean, that's how I make a living. You know, I've learned that stuff. I've spent a lot of money, a lot of time creating things that nobody asked for. And it's like, no, guys, but it's awesome. But if they don't want it, if they don't know that it's awesome, then it serves no purpose. So, you know, you really have to get out there and show people. And my philosophy is you show people by doing, you know, not by creating a great flyer, but by doing and producing great results.
And I think another important lesson is you promoted yourself. Obviously, you had these two great world champion mentors that helped you in the fighting space to get to the point where you got to in the UFC. But now you've transitioned into this speaking space, which is a whole different area. And I don't know about you, Charlie, but I've been a fitness professional for 17 years. But as I started the podcast, people were like, well, who are you to be talking about fitness? I'm like, I've been in this game for 17 years. I didn't just, you know, I just happened to build my website and do this thing recently. Can you talk a little bit about how that's been for you transitioning from a professional mixed martial art fighter to being an author, a speaker, a motivator?
Yeah, you know, I'm very fortunate because it's kind of the opposite effect. Well, I wouldn't say the opposite effect, but I have an ace in my pocket because I was in the UFC, because I have that credibility. There's a certain credibility that's attached to my name. Now, that only goes so far. 100%. Let me throw in that little caveat there. That only goes so far. I've seen plenty of UFC guys try to do stuff, whatever stuff, you know, speaking or brands or coaching, et cetera, who just flop because that initial like awe, you know, wow factor wears off quick. So for me, to say that I'm a former UFC fighter, that puts me in a category that not many people are. However, that only takes you so far. And I believe 100% in my abilities, my capabilities, my writing ability, my speaking ability, my cognitive abilities, you know, to think and to translate that into practical applications for people. But it's all part of the game. But even so, you know, so I focus a lot on youth. I love speaking to high school, middle school kids. But at the same time, I really, really know, I have this, I don't know, just strong belief that my content is perfectly applicable to professionals, to you, to me, to other people. But, you know, I'm facing that same challenge that you are in the professional. Like if I go into a corporation and say, hey, I'm a UFC fighter and this is what I can teach your employees. I mean, I've gotten firsthand from both principals and executives, and we're not really a fighting people.
Right, but it's like, exactly.
Yeah, but it's like, no. Look beyond it. It's the principles. It's the mindset. It's the way I live my life that produces results. In essence, that's what we're all looking for. So it's certainly a challenge, but, you know, by doing, that's producing good quality content, good events. You know, that's the most useful thing I've learned.
Yeah, powerful points there again. And I'd love to hear a bit more about that, because I've talked about my Brazilian jiu-jitsu experience and how basically, Charlie, I mean, I've been in martial arts for a long time, but starting to train with a Brazilian jiu-jitsu expert with a sensei and then getting into some MMA training, although I never fought in MMA, a story for another time. But it helped me develop the confidence to go after speaking, because I was way more afraid of public speaking than getting into a cage and fighting, you know, especially once you get skills. Can you talk about the similarities or the takeaways, what you can offer based on your experience in martial arts for someone who doesn't immediately see the connection between like doing martial arts or fighting in a cage, fighting in the UFC, and becoming a successful person in other areas of life?
Yeah, you perfectly said, we didn't plan this, but you perfectly set it up for me to explain a little bit of my business philosophy. So, you know, my value prop or my tagline that I'm working with is, I develop self-confident leaders by teaching a fighter's mindset. Okay, and that's touching on exactly what you're talking about, developing self-confidence, because I believe the base of a being, it has to be self-confidence. And how do you develop self-confidence? By figuring out who you are. And then once you figure out who you are, you determine, okay, what do I stand for? So I want to do this. I stand for this. I measure my success on this, right? So it's like, you know who you are and how you interact with the world around you. So for me specifically, through a fighter's mindset, well, what is a fighter's mindset? For me, my fighter's mindset is this. I've boiled it down to five elements of excellence: creating a vision, identifying your core values, defining success, living with accountability, and surrounding yourself with the best. So when I walk into any audience, any group, I tell my story, how I went from being a junior high Spanish teacher to a UFC fighter, by applying those five elements of excellence. And that in totality is a fighter's mindset. So I don't know if that answered exactly what you're looking for, but that's how I apply what I know and what I've done into a useful, workable program.
Yeah, and I'd love to get into those all those points a bit more, but I'll tell you, I'm listening to a book right now by Simon Sinek called Leaders Eat Last.
Yeah.
And it's, have you read it?
No, but I just listened to his podcast on London Rio and it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And in this book about leadership, he takes examples from the military because the consequences are so high in leadership when people's lives are on the line or there's a war going on. So there is so much to learn, and it's more about that and taking those leadership lessons and understanding human beings and putting it into play in other areas like business. So, and with fighting, it's the same thing. There's way more on the line. You can act tough all you want, but you know, if you've ever gotten into the cage or ever trained a martial art and had your ass handed to you, like you have, Charlie, and like I have, although at a much smaller level in, you know, safety of my dojo, my Brazilian jiu-jitsu school, you know, like, whoa, there's a lot on the line, and it develops this humility as well as confidence. So let's go into each of those points a bit deeper. You said the first thing was to know what you stand for.
Yeah. So I'll just kind of walk through it. The first two elements of mine are creating a vision and identifying your core values. And whenever I, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm talking to a young person or a professional, it's like creating a vision or living your vision. Like, what do you want? Where do you want to be? What do you want to do? And the problem with a lot of people is that we just get into life. And then all of a sudden, you know, where I'm 35 or you're 40 or 50 or whatever, and you don't often stop and think about, what am I working towards? What is that vision? Where do I want to be? And then your core values, you know, I just define that as knowing exactly who you are and being that person 100% of the time, whether it puts you in front of the crowd or sets you apart from the crowd. So it's getting a grasp and a comfortability, a self-confidence with yourself. And once you have that self-confidence, that's when you start interacting with the world around you.
Yeah, and I'd love for you to share a story about perhaps someone you worked with or testimonial you got, because a lot of people, they have a drive. In fact, I've talked about goal setting on this podcast, and someone asked, they're like, well, I don't know what to set my goals to. I've done some marathon running, and I don't think it's going to really be the best thing for me to do to run another marathon. And it seems like there's a lack of clarity about what they stand for, about what they truly want. Do you have a story about someone you helped get that clarity to focus on what they truly want instead of like the money or, you know, the nice car or relationship or kids?
Yeah. You know, I have an online course that I'm running, and I just brought up some notes because last week we talked about defining success. We talked about, you know, what does success mean to you, and not basing it off of kind of what you just said, the wins, the losses, the getting, attaining the goals. And what came out of one of the guys was that success has nothing to do with accomplishing goals. It's rather striving with acceptance. So that means that through these exercises, through this conversation, he came to the conclusion that success for me, or the goals that I'm setting, are all based upon this premise of striving with acceptance. So I'm going to strive, I'm going to try, I'm going to do my best, but it's with acceptance that it's not all going to work out for the best. And I'm not going to judge myself on whether it works out or not. I'm going to judge myself on the striving part of it. So that was a pretty cool thing that came from it. And also another guy I work with who, he came to me several times, honestly, three, four times, to the point where I kind of discarded it. And he was a fan who became a friend who lives in my area, and he weighed 390 pounds. And he had come to me several times, and he said, Charlie, I could use a life overhaul program. I could use, you know, everything, mindset, nutrition, exercise, et cetera. And finally, you know, probably the fourth time he came to me, he said, look, my wife is having a baby. I need to change my life. And I had heard of that, you know, the baby effect in other areas. Yeah.
The baby effect. I like it.
Yeah. I didn't create it. I heard it from another podcaster, John Lee Dumas, and I'm sure he heard it from someone else. But so I sat down with this guy and we made a plan, and he's down 55 pounds in the last 4 months, and his life is changed, you know, and that was a dramatic thing, and something that I stressed that I don't know any secrets. You know, Ted, you don't know any secrets. It's just how we apply what we do know. And I was able to apply those, you know, concepts and principles with my buddy, my client, and his life has changed. So, you know, those are just kind of two examples of how, you know, what I do, it kind of works, how I use what I know with people.
Yeah, great stories, great results. Tell us about the next step. So the first two are creating a vision and knowing your values. What's the next step after that?
The third element is defining success. And there's components of it as what I just said, like kind of coming up with your definition of success. And let me tell you the basis for this. So in professional fighting, you know, in wrestling and any other sport, you compete, you win or you lose, you compete the next day or the next week. But in the UFC, you know, I would fight, and let's say I won, then I would be flying high for the next 3 or 4 months until my next fight, right? And life was great.
Yeah.
Everything was great. Woo, woo. But then what was happening is I'd lose. And I might have 5 months after a fight until I fought again. So for those 5 months, my self-worth was just, it was not good. I would just feel like garbage. And this happens 5, 10, 15 times. And I just got to a point where I thought, this is not okay. I don't like this at all. I'm fighting. I'm living my dream. And I feel like garbage half the time. And this is not right. And it really, it was like kind of getting to the bottom of the bottle there. I just couldn't take it anymore. So I had to reframe how I viewed how I lived my life and the results I had in my life. And it was a boiling point. You know, it was just, I'm done with it. I can't do this anymore. And I really had to make myself okay with the appreciation of the daily grind and to really find the value in that rather than the end product. And don't get me wrong, I love winning more than anything in the world. I love winning. But it's not the end all and be all, because I've lived my life where it is the end all and be all. And it's just, it's not a life that I want to live. You know, if that's how someone chooses to live, then, you know, more power to them. But for me, it's not about that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that story. And people don't realize how tough it is to lose in an MMA match and to have more than one loss. And also the fact that it ain't like boxing, like Bernard Hopkins, I think, retired undefeated. That's never going to happen. Every single phenom, every single like MMA fighter like Anderson Silva, GSP, just every single one that you can name who got to a high level of success, was the number one in the world, they've all lost. You know, Randy Couture, I mean, you could just go on and on. They've all had losses. And you had to know that, you know what, this is going to come, it's going to happen eventually, and I have to redefine my success by not winning all the time, or else I'm going to feel down all the time. Yeah, powerful lesson there.
And let me add in there also, so I mean, there have been guys, so I guess GSP did lose, but I mean, there are people who do go undefeated, but even those people who go undefeated, they battle with themselves. You know, GSP retired, quote, on top of the world, but somewhere in his heart and soul, GSP doubts if he really beat Johnny Hendricks. You know, Floyd Mayweather, who retired undefeated, I'm sure somewhere he's disappointed in his performance, you know, the outcome. But so even if you are, you know, the one in a billion people who do go undefeated, it's still that battle of the performance. And that's what I really think I encourage, you know, shifting that mindset.
Yeah, so important. And it's a more realistic way of looking at things. I was talking to someone recently and they were talking about their kid. Actually, I was with a friend of mine and he was talking about his kid. And he's like, oh, I just want my kid to win. He should want to be number one. And I'm like, that's just not realistic, because, you know, number one, it's just not realistic to expect to be that, although you should strive for that. And, you know, I think about where I am. I'm not trying to be the number one speaker, Charlie. I'm trying to create the type of life that truly makes me happy. And that's less dependent on my competitive relationship to other people out there. It more has more to do with how many people do I inspire? How much money do I make? You know, is it enough to afford the type of life that I want? Because I don't need a yacht. I don't need to have my own private island. I want the type of life that I want. And it involves more traveling and going to conferences and learning and connecting with cool people like yourself. So that redefining success, man, that is so important, because so many people get lost down that path to try to be number one. And I see it here in Miami Beach. It's like you're worth $100 million, but oh, look, there's a billionaire over there. So you feel good when you're around all the people who have less money, but then you see the guy who has more, and there's always someone who's going to be better. There's always someone who's going to have more. And it's just a terrible way to try to measure your self-worth. Yeah. So what's, because I was going to ask you for an example of some of your losses and what you learned from it, and you kind of answered that question. So what comes after that redefining success?
Living with accountability.
So important.
Yeah, and when I do workshops, I break each one of the elements down into different phases. But, you know, so I break accountability down into a few different areas, and two of those areas in particular, you know, obviously there's the accountability that we're talking about with other people. So, you know, honestly, the biggest thing with the guy I'm working with, the kind of lifestyle overhaul program, it's the accountability. Like I said, I'm not handing him magic recipes. I'm just getting his weekly report. We're doing the workouts. I'm getting the weekly report of the workouts, and I'll keep him on track. So there's that accountability. But then also I focus on, you know, two kind of, I don't know, inner, I don't know, areas of accountability. And that's in one, I really focus on preparation, and I focus on controlling your attitude. Mm-hmm. So those two areas of accountability for any ambitious, driven person are extremely important. Controlling your attitude and preparation.
Yeah, controlling your attitude. So important, especially when you see online, like we're Facebook friends, you see so many people who fly off the handle about politics, arguing about that, spending time on things that they don't really need to spend time on. But for someone who doesn't immediately get that idea, can you talk a little bit about what you mean by controlling your attitude?
Yeah. So on a daily basis, I have this memory in my head. So the other day I was at Sheetz, which is a giant, awesome convenience store up here in the Northeast. And I was just pulling in and some woman, I mean, there was nothing. I just pulled in and this woman like flew past me and I could see her like yelling at me. And I thought like, man, what? What just happened here, lady? Like, what's wrong with you? And so then I apply that to my life, and there's instances in my life where I'll snap, you know, just like she did, or I'll be real irritable. And a habit that I've gotten into is just controlling my attitude. Like, it's kind of an activity, as I call attitude intervention. Like, I'm very, very self-aware of my attitude, and there's certain, you know, points in our daily life that, you know, your attitude can work for you or it can work against you. It can go on the kind of productive avenue or like deconstructive avenue. And it's when I'm dealing with my wife, right? And she'll say something and maybe I'll instantly feel like, I could have made a smart remark, but I'm not going to make it. And then you go this route. So it's really just having a self-awareness of your attitude and being aware that it can work for you or it can work against you. And the more that you have that self-awareness, the more you'll notice that in your everyday life, it can kind of give you like a pause, a little bit of a pause before you react and make sure you're reacting in the most favorable way.
That's pure gold because, as you mentioned, we all have times where it's like, oh, we just want to react to something. And a lot of cases, it could be just you had a bad night's sleep or you're hungry or whatever, you got something on your mind. But if you don't have the self-awareness, then you're going to just think that the way you feel is justified because you feel it and then go about your day. Did you learn that from fighting, from wrestling, or how did you develop that skill?
You know, so you had asked or you had touched on like lessons I'd learned from some of my losses. When I got knocked out by Danny Castillo, it's a very humbling thing to get knocked out cold in front of, you know, close to a million people. I mean, that it's your
right. That was live on TV, right?
Yes. Live on TV.
Yeah.
It's the most vulnerable state I've ever been in. And it was in front of close to a million people. So it's just very, I mean, it just happened to Fabricio Werdum the other day. I mean, it happens to the best of the best. I mean, it happens to everybody that puts themselves out there like that. And it, you know, when I kind of woke up from it, that was another kind of culminating point in my life. But from there, I just got really into like, okay, I can't measure myself on winning and losing because I'm going to drive myself crazy. And I just started to get into personal development, which is, you know, kind of being the best version of yourself. And I would just become aware of other people, right? Like other people acting a certain way. And then I thought, wait a minute, maybe I should start taking a look at myself because I got very, you know, MMA is a very tough business. It's a very not nice business. And it got me jaded. So I began, you know, I went down the slippery slope of pointing out things that were wrong with the MMA business. And then that trickled down into people, other fighters. And then I just became really like judgmental. And then after I got knocked out, I just thought, wait a minute, dude, like look at yourself. Stop looking at other people and look at yourself. And then I just started to dissect how I would act, how I acted and how I spoke and how I responded. And that just made me self-aware of, you know, areas that I could really improve upon.
Yeah. So that loss really made an impact on you, as anyone listening could imagine. I mean, on live TV, yeah, that's crazy, but you learned an invaluable lesson that's going to help you for the rest of your life. Now, very powerful. Thanks for sharing that, because I think, like you mentioned earlier, people will see you and think that, well, oh, you're a UFC fighter, you're probably naturally gifted. And, you know, if they don't know your story and your background and, you know, your wins and losses, that's something that you had to deal with and to find your way past that. And so many people let much, much less stop them from going after what they want to accomplish because of the fears of things that are not nearly as public or as intense as that. How do you help people get beyond that fear of failure?
it kind of goes back to, it's kind of a progressive, you know, these elements that I have, this mindset that I have, it's a progressive kind of chronological system, and it just builds upon yourself, and it starts back with your vision, you know, knowing where you want to go, your values, what you stand for, and you know, how you define success. That kind of gives you, I don't want to say that it thickens your skin, because that's not what it's about, but it gives you a foundation. It gives you the self-confidence to be yourself. And with that self-confidence, with that kind of armor of, I know where I want to go, I know who I am, and this is how I judge myself. It really creates, I mean, by default, it helps create self-confidence and encourages you to be okay with yourself. And then pragmatic or a systematic way or strategic way to develop not having fear of those goals is by just not, you don't have to be a UFC fighter from day one. All right, let's start with like small goal number one, and then we'll accomplish small goal number one, and then small goal number two and three. Maybe then we'll fail, but then we'll, you know, it's like these little wins, these little successes can be a practical way to build the habit of setting and pursuing those goals.
Yeah, great answer. And you mentioned earlier that fighting is a not nice business. And not only have you had these wins and losses, and that experience that you mentioned about getting knocked out on live TV, but you've also had to handle some criticism, because, I mean, you get on ShareDog or any of the forums and people commenting on YouTube. And, you know, can you talk about some of the criticism that you experienced in your MMA career and how you learned to handle it, and perhaps any lessons that you could share with someone listening who's having some issues with handling criticism in their life?
Absolutely. And I was going to touch on this, but you know, he just brought up and led me into it. You know, when I lost, so MMA not being a nice business, even when I win, heck, you know, when I win or when I lose, you know, when I got knocked out by Castillo, I got home and I was concussed and I was laying on my couch. I couldn't, you know, I essentially couldn't do anything for, you know, 4 days. I couldn't really think straight. My vision was messed up. I couldn't babysit my daughter. And my daughter at that time was, you know, 1 year old. And I had this vision of me laying writhing on the couch with a headache. I had to call my in-laws, who are the nicest, sweetest people in the world. And I just have this faint memory, a vision of them walking in the door, scooping up Gracie and, you know, walking out the door. They didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to do. They thought, what's going on? And as I laid there and you know, I could open my eyes here and there, and I was scrolling through Twitter, which is like scrolling through Twitter looking for feedback is like you have an ache in your leg and you Google ache in leg disease. And then it tells you everything that, you know, it drives you crazy. And I was laying there and I got this message from this coward of a person who, it was like 10 Twitter messages long. You know, you can only text tweet so much, but telling me how worthless I was, like just the meanest things in the world that you can imagine. And then there were, you know, I'm not going to say hundreds, but tens, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 of other messages telling me how embarrassed I should be. And I'm the worst fighter in the world and I'm not worthy of the UFC. And as I was laying there, I responded to this person, and immediately that person tucked their tail between their legs and was trying to make up with me, telling me how, no, I'm just saying, man. I mean, but, and that experience taught me these people are cowards. They're nothing. They are literally nothing. And it's not worth my time to care at all about what they think. So that was a, I wouldn't say it's a strategy, but that was an experience. And to anyone else dealing with that, I would say, hey, don't wait to experience it for yourself. I experienced it, and it is, from my experiences, fact. So use my experiences to help you, because it's the truth. You know, those people are faceless cowards.
Yeah, I tell you, I have not had to deal with anything like that, but I did have this one guy who was like a well-known guy in the fitness industry who started calling me out for like no reason. And it turned out like he really caused like quite a stir, and it was on Facebook and it was kind of ridiculous. And it turned out like that was his MO. Someone would trigger him and he would just go off And that was him. And it turned out had nothing to do with me. It was just an unhappy person.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like we're living in that world where someone's watching you on TV and they see an opportunity to take a shot at you because they're not feeling good. And they write 10 Twitter messages. Where do you think that comes from? I know you've had to deal with a lot more criticism, as you said, than most of us will ever because of being in the public like you were. Where do you think that stems from?
You know, I think, I don't know the exact answer to that question, but you know, initially, my initial thoughts are, so we live in a time, and I don't want to get too cliche or like whatever, grandfatherly here, but you know, we live in a time where people are taught that we are all special. We can all win. We are all winners. We're all great. And it's just, I mean, from an external stance, that's not accurate. I mean, there are leaders, there are followers, there are in the middle, there are high achievers, low achievers, and that's fine. No, you're not judged on that. But I think that belief maybe, or that maybe false belief, then causes people to really introspect and really think about where they are. And a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. They're not comfortable with taking a real concerted look at, okay, where am I? Because that then will entail, okay, this is where I'm at. This is where I want to go. And that gap requires work. That gap requires progress and effort and hard work, dedication, perseverance, something that people aren't willing to do. So what's easier than closing that gap between where they are and where they want to be is, as we were talking earlier, as I did when I was fighting, direct that frustration at other people. And so I think that's much easier than changing themselves, changing the course of their lives, is to spit that fire at someone else. And I think kind of that overall picture might have something to do with, and the ease of which you can do it is kind of the third component.
Yeah, good answer. And I'll tell you, when you mentioned, when I asked you the question and in your answer, you said, we're in a time where people are told they're great, they're wonderful, and so on. But if they don't feel that because they haven't earned it, that's got to create some massive dissonance about like, well, if I'm so great, why do you feel so bad? And finding a way to get rid of that. So if you're listening right now and you're one of those people, time to step up. to step up. Stop being that person. And because hating is really, it doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't get you paid more money. Most of the time, it doesn't get you more popularity. So really start looking at what Charlie said, that gap of where you are, where you want to be, and start to come up with a strategy to cross it, you know?
You
got a follow-up.
Two little follow-ups there. So, you know, you had mentioned Simon Sinek earlier. I would listen to his podcast with London Real.
Yeah, great show.
He was saying, and it touched on exactly what you were just saying there. He was saying that, you know, a lot of young people, first of all, that sentiment that we're all young people are taught that you're all champions and you're all great, et cetera, et cetera. And then, as you just said, he said that, and maybe this comes from his book, I don't know. He said, when they realize, then they get in the real world and they realize that that's not true. And then there's this dissonance, like, wait a minute, I thought I was this person. Where's my job? Where's my money? Where's my this, my that? And then it creates this inner stress and turmoil. And he was saying that, interesting statement. He said, you know, if you look at some of these young people who commit suicide, you look at their Facebook page and you'd have no idea that there was anything negative going on in their life. And it's, you know, they're painting this picture of this grandiose life. And that's, you know, kind of the, because of technology, that's where we're at. But there's no alignment. There's no real true alignment between their inner and then what they're putting out there in the world or, you know, for simplicity's sake on Facebook.
Yeah, man, I got to listen to that interview. I have not. I'm a big fan of London Real, though. I'll have that. If you haven't listened to London Real, I highly suggest you do. It's a video. It's on YouTube. I think it's on iTunes as well. I'll have the link to that episode. I will be getting Simon on here soon as well, but because I got to dive into this book that he's written, Leaders Eat Last. It's one of the most brilliant books I've ever listened to, because I'm listening to it, not reading it. But yeah, so thanks for bringing that up. Charlie, I'd love to switch directions a little bit and talk about how you set yourself up for success. And the first thing I want to ask you about is, how does fitness play into your life? Because before, you're a wrestler. I know what that's like. You train for hours. You know, the UFC, you train, I don't know how many days for how many hours, you know, several times a day, two or three times a day for days on end. I get the feeling that you're not doing that anymore. So can you start there and talk about how health and fitness fit into your life these days?
Honestly, I don't know if I'm fortunate to come across, you know, podcasts and podcast hosts that ask great questions, but it's such a, one of my key concepts, messages, and we didn't prep for this, but I look at health and fitness as overall wellness to my life. And it's a psychological boost for me. So yeah, when I was training, forever, fitness has been a part of my life. Started out with wrestling, you know, multiple sports, strength training, etc. And obviously for the last 10 years in UFC, it was my life. And then when I got out of that focus and I've been focusing more on building myself as a speaker, it is still a key component. And the reason being that I look at health and fitness, I look at training, I look at pushing my physical and mental limits as psychological health. So it's not just that I want to look good. It's not just that I want to feel good or lose weight or sweat. It's all of that combined. I was one of the high school athletes I train around here. He was, we were talking about, we're going to do a track workout. He's like, oh, I'm going to kick your butt, Spaniard. And I said to him, look, dude, I do sprints three times a week. And to a normal person, why would you do sprints three times a week? But I believe in the value of pushing my physical limits on a regular basis, because it, back to that accountability and preparation, it's preparing me for anything that I might encounter in life. The mental strength, the mental fortitude, the physical capacity. I look at life as an open book. You never know what's coming your way. And I look at health and fitness, pushing myself, not just lifting weights, but, you know, burnout sets and interval sprints and timed miles. I look at that stuff as just building my arsenal for life. And it's a key component.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised to hear that answer. That's very much like, you know, the training for looking good in the mirror versus training for a fight, training to be a warrior. And maybe you're not going to fight a war. Maybe you're not going to fight in the cage, but you are going to have to fight some battles in life, and some of them are going to be against yourself. Probably most of them are going to be against yourself. So I love that answer. Really building up your psychological power, your confidence, your strength. Do you have any special things that you do to get your health at the optimum level to be the best dad or the best businessman you can?
I'll break into a couple kind of sub-components of that. So my training routine, and this would be a routine that I would suggest for, a middle-aged person. I don't know, anywhere from, a young person up to, I don't know, middle age, 40 probably years old. But, you know, an in-shape, ambitious, driven, lifelong, either athlete or athletic-oriented person. But some of the components that I make sure are comprise my workouts every week, because I love interval training. So, you know, a practical application of it. I might run for 30 minutes, which is approximately 4 miles, and I'll do half of that at a decent pace. And then the second half of that, I'll do interval sprints. I'll just pick a landmark and sprint to that landmark, slow jog to the next landmark, and then sprint from there. So that's kind of a regular workout that I do, not just going for a run, which is good, but I like adding in that mental capacity, that mindset training. Another thing I like to do is I do a lot of body weight training, basic stuff,
nice.
Push-ups, sit-ups, et cetera. And I love muscular endurance because, again, you don't know when you're ever going to need it. Muscular endurance translates into mental endurance. And, you know, I do a lot of burnout sets. honestly, I don't know if this is a good workout or not, but the other day I did 10 burnout sets of push-ups, pull-ups, and bodyweight pike presses. And, I mean, that's 30 burnout sets. That's 30 times that you're pushing your mind and your body to the max.
And when
times.
You say burnout set, you mean till failure?
To failure, yes.
Gotcha.
So my first set of push-ups was maybe 60 push-ups. My second set was 40. My third was whatever. And you do it 10 times until you absolutely can't go any further. And it's just building muscular endurance. But again, it's building mental endurance.
Yeah, and if you've got some pounds to lose around your waist, that will go a long way to get that fat off for sure with all that muscular endurance work. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I don't work very hard to stay lean after doing workouts like that. You don't have to be super clean with your diet or whatever.
Yeah, and it's kind of counterproductive because I want to get – it's funny. I was having this conversation with my best friend the other day. I was like, dude, I want to put on some weight. Should I put on some weight? And he's like, yeah, you could use some poundage. And I'm thinking, but I just love this style of training that I burn it right off. I love the intervals. I love the burnout set. So it's kind of – counterproductive because I would like to put on size, but it's like, I just value this psychological benefit so much.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Sometimes people have this incongruence with what they want physically, but they don't want to do anything different. Like I'm in this thing where I've got a lot of injuries, as you know. I'm not sure how many injuries you have, but in the fight game, you get a lot of injuries, whether you're a pro or not. And I have 3 herniated discs in my neck from a car accident that I was in. So I'm into this body weight gymnastics, strength training is what it's called. And a lot of it's mobility actually, but I can't do bicep curls. I would like my arms to be bigger, but I don't value it, so I don't do it. You know, that's a great point. And great, I love the running and having like these landmarks and it sounds like you're playing a little bit. You're testing yourself psychologically. Okay, the sign comes up. Okay, I'm going to run to this next sign or to that rock or tree. Kind of playing with it a little bit instead of just going out there. Very cool. And what about some success habits in terms of, do you have a morning ritual or productivity habits?
Yes. So I'll do a couple. So I drink a lot of water. I think that's, I read an awesome book, The Power of Habit. And
Charles Duhigg, right?
If I said
his name right.
I was actually going to say it, but I didn't know how to say it. But he talks about keystone habits, meaning like one habit that will transcend into other areas of your life. And I think that, as I said, the muscular endurance training transcends into your mental endurance and being able to sit through a meeting or being able to get through a work day or being able to handle and not get super stressed when your daughter is crying. I think that the habits are that same way, but drinking water is a keystone habit that has transcended. I really like and value getting up early. And there's a couple reasons for that. I don't think it's essential. And I'm actually a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk and just reading his new book today. And I mean, specifically today, he said, I don't think you need to get up early to be successful. I mean, if you do your best work at 2 a.m., do your best work at 2 a.m. But for me and my structured life, when I had my daughter and my marriage, and I'm realizing there's so much I want to do with my life and I can't create more time in the day. So what I can do is I can get up earlier. So I get up, prior to 5, right before 5, about 4:50, I get up and I read for the first, well, first I journal very, quickly. I use a 5-minute journal and then I read for about 30 minutes. And then following that 30 minutes of reading, probably at least 4 days a week, I'll get my workout done at 6 in the morning. I'll go for one of those 30 or 35 minute interval runs. And then I get home, I shower, and then that's when I get my day started. It's a little thing is I don't check my cell phone. I made a rule that I don't check my cell phone until I'm done reading. So I get up, get downstairs, journal, read. And then sometimes I'll check it before I go for my run. But then if not, I'll check it when I get back from my run.
Yeah, I love that last one too, because so many of us wake up and start with the email. And, you know, even one of my clients, I saw him, he's like, oh, he's the CEO of his company. He's the head of his company. And it's not a huge company. It's probably got 20 employees, but very successful guy in commercial real estate. And he's on the bike, just stressed out about, because he's doing all these emails the first thing in the morning. And it's, he doesn't pay me for that, so I don't get into it with him, but so important. And I love that you mentioned that. So great stuff, getting up early. Yeah, I kind of differ with Gary Vee on that. I mean, there's some research that shows that people are more creative at night, like late at night, but it can pay a toll on you. I would love to get him on and ask him about, because I know he's on this health kick now, but I'll have that book in the show notes as well. Well, Charlie, it's been a pleasure, man. I've enjoyed speaking with you. It's been not just a great interview, but a great conversation. Really enjoyed hearing your stories and also putting a personality to the person that I've seen fight in the UFC. So if someone wanted to follow up with you and to get your book or to inquire about coaching and find out more about what you're up to, where can they go?
Yes, everything I do is hosted on my website, charlie-brenneman.com. You can Google Spaniard UFC and it'll come up. But, you know, to work with me, I do speaking. So any event, whether it's a school or whether it's a corporation, you know, I have my story. And aside from that, my biggest thing, my biggest like push that I'm working on right now is passing on, delivering that the fighter's mindset. And I have a course that I can either do one-on-one or in small groups called A Fighter's Mindset, where I cover those elements that we were talking about. And it's awesome, man. It's such a discovery process. And I despise foo-foo fluff. And I try to choose my verbiage correctly. But this has just been awesome. The groups, the guys that I've worked with has been tremendous. And so I would encourage you to, you know, check out my website. All my social media links are there. If you're interested in working with me, you know, the contact is right there. And then, of course, my book, I go into broader detail of my origins and my thought processes. I talk in detail about getting knocked out, about beating Rick's story and living my real life Rocky story, all the hardships that come along with being a UFC fighter. So, you know, it's all housed there at charlie-brenneman.com. And I got to say, Ted, it's been an hour and 6 minutes and it feels like it's been 20 minutes. So this has been awesome.
Yeah, I'm wrapping it up now because I feel like we could, man, I want to ask you about the fight business and more and talk more about that. Maybe we can get you back on.
Round two, yep.
Yeah, round two. I love it. Yeah, round two. But yeah, I want to be respectful of your time. And also, you know, that's how long we try to keep the episodes. But it was a pleasure connecting with you, meeting with you, having this conversation. And why don't you finish up with a few final words and we'll wrap things up.
Yeah, I appreciate having me here. And to everyone out there who's listening, or, you know, there's a reason that you're listening. The reason I listen to podcasts is to get inside the minds of the most successful people in the world and trying to take not everything, but just one or two of the things from their lessons and applying them to my life. Some of those things stick, some of those things don't. You know, drinking water stuck, but other things don't. So just pick something. Don't try to pick everything. Just pick something and start doing it today. The biggest key to success that I know is by doing action. And once you do one small thing, the next small thing will happen. And it's like the snowball effect. So pick one thing, do that one thing, and try not to stress about the rest.
Great final words, Charlie Brenneman. Thank you so much. Thanks for your knowledge, your wisdom, and most importantly, your time.
Thanks, Ted.
Welcome to the Ted's Takeaways part of the interview. I'm going to make this pretty short because it was a long interview. So I want to get to the lessons right away. One, the first lesson I want you to, or the first takeaway rather, is that look at how humble and cool Charlie is. He's opinionated and he's a tough talker, right? He comes from wrestling. He comes from MMA. He's a guy who can back up what he says, not just in the octagon, but also as a person of integrity. So that's the first takeaway, the type of guy that Charlie is. And he mentioned something really important, that after he left fighting, he couldn't rely solely on the fame to make his next endeavor a success. He's had to continue working. And the second thing I want to talk about is the lesson that one of Charlie's mentors shared with him when we talked about the business of fighting. And so the second takeaway is that if you don't promote yourself, then nobody will. So important, because it puts the responsibility on us. So if you're sitting there, if you feel like you deserve a raise, if you feel like you deserve a promotion, if you feel like you're not getting what you want in whatever area of your life, you need to promote yourself. You need to speak up, because nobody's going to do it for you. It's just not going to happen. So that was such a critical lesson, something that I took away from this interview that affected me personally. The third lesson is that the challenges never end, no matter how successful you are, no matter where you get to in your life. And that's something I see with my clients all the time. You know what? What do I always say? Oh, I train CEOs of multi-million dollar companies, which is true. But what I don't say sometimes is that these guys, they have more problems than the average person. They're solving more problems. They just know how to maintain their mindset. So the challenges never end, no matter how successful you are. In fact, you could argue that some of your challenges may be resolved by your success, but it creates a whole new level of challenges, and in some cases, much more bigger challenges. So that's something to keep in mind. And another thing that was a big takeaway for me was when he said how most people look at success, or successful people rather, and we see the tip of the iceberg. We don't see how they got there. And what Charlie said is, I got to my level of success because I've had 1,000 times more heartache, 1,000 times more failure, 1,000 times more struggles, more ups and downs. And it's so true. And I'll tell you, I feel that in my life. I don't know what you think about me, where I am in my life, but I have more struggles than wins. And I just keep going because I'm so connected with my mission, connected with what I'm doing with the podcast, and connected with the speaking and helping more people transform their health, their body, and their lives. But it's a struggle. It is. And as we talked about earlier, just a few seconds ago, really, the challenges never end. So it's up to us to rise up to the level of our challenge, to make sure that we have the proper mindset, to make sure that we're taking care of our bodies, upgrading our operating system. In other words, how we look at our success, our struggles, our failures, our setbacks, to make sure that we don't get lost in the game of success, the game of going after our goals. And that's what I want to leave you with. Make sure that you work on yourself. And that's why you come to this podcast, I hope, to upgrade your information, to upgrade your operating system, to listen to interviews with people who are successful in their own way. They may not be multimillionaires like some of my clients. They may be successful in other ways, but you get to hear how they think, how to approach their obstacles, the adversity that they experience. And I want you to let that sink into your mind. I want you to adopt it. I want you, through osmosis, to start to upload those thoughts, those perspectives, that mindset, so that you can create the type of life that you truly want for yourself, the type of body that you truly want for yourself. That's what I want to leave you with. Now go crush your week, and I will talk to you next time.